sites in the Gulf of Mexico, with 51 producing fields on federal and state lands. Tracy's got some prepared comments, then we're going to go into some Q&A. So, Tracy, I'll hand it over to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Hope everybody can hear me okay. I'm not seeing my image on the screen, but that's okay. We'll muddle through it. I'm presuming you
can hear
me. All right, good. Thank you. So it's a little bit unusual to do these presentations virtually, but we'll get used to it because we're going to need to. As we go through the presentation here, I'm not going to cover every page. I plan to spend about 20 minutes here with you on certain things that I think are very important. But the rest of it we'll leave open for questioning. So basically a snapshot here on slide 3, where we are at the end of the second quarter, 42,000 barrels oil per day equivalent. The takeaway I want you to have here is that we operate most of what we produce. We produce in both the shallow and deep waters of the Gulf of Mexico. We're agnostic as to whether it's oil or gas. We're agnostic as to whether it's deep water or shallow. We can operate in both those arenas. What we are not agnostic about is economics. So what we care about is whether these projects make money, whether they're in deep water or shallow water. Going to slide 4, we closed in first part of this year, Magnolia Field, and we bought 100% interest in all of that field. We just got in seismic within the last week. So we've been operating on an older seismic database. So now we'll get some update on it. We're pretty excited about what we're seeing. So expect to see some activity there in the future. This year's CapEx is estimated at $15 to $25 million. Obviously very reduced. We are cash flow positive. In our most recent redetermination of our borrowing base, we were at $215 million, which is more than adequate. We've got about $80 million out right now, which is what we were at the end of the second quarter. I've gotten a lot of questions about hurricane impact in the Gulf of Mexico. We had some. It's pretty minimal. We've got a lot of structures out there, probably in the neighborhood of $5 million of total damage across the Gulf of Mexico. Most of it's superficial, boat landings, stairwells, a little bit of damage to one building and one of our fields out further to the west or closer to Texas, the East Cameron area, in that we had some damage to one of the housing structures there that got in and created a little bit of havoc with water being taken on into that structure. So, and unfortunately, it was an electrical housing unit. So, we're down there a little bit, but we're muddling on through it. We've got most of it restored. There's still some that's down. Magnolia is down now as a result of planned interruption. So, approximately 3,000 barrels a day. That was due to an amount of work that was being done at another host facility. It's operated by a major operator, so that will be delayed somewhat. We'll account for that later on in our adjustments to production as we go forward. Magnolia, very nice tack on for us again, around 33,100. Barrels of oil a day. It's mostly oil, 82%. We closed that in the second quarter. We bought that from Conoco and Marubeni. It is a standalone facility in the Gulf of Mexico in Garden Banks area. So we're excited about it. It's been there for a while, and we do see some upside there that we continue to want to exploit. Mobile Bay. Very important transaction for us. This is a shallow water acquisition in the Gulf of Mexico. It's primarily gas, deep gas, in excess of 20,000 feet. It was discovered in 1979 by Mobil Oil Company. I spent a little bit of time, very minimal amount of time When that well was drilled, I remember when we brought it in, these wells would make in excess of 70 million cubic feet a day. We're targeting 50 to 70 million or 75 million a day when we do drill a well out there. And I'll have some more to tell you about that shortly. But similar to Magnolia, we've just gotten in new data that we didn't have before. So we're pleased with that, and we'll be sharpening up our location there in the not too distant future. Would like to have a little bit of discussion on slide 8 with regard to ESG. I do want people to be aware of the fact that this company has been in existence for a long time. One of the reasons that is that we do care about what the community thinks about us, how we operate our personnel offshore in the Gulf of Mexico, how we manage safety, and the commitments that we have to the community. So we don't talk about our charitable contributions very much, and I guess maybe that's just a bit of humility. But the company does donate a good bit of money in the community, and have in the past to support local activities and people that are in need. Our employees volunteer their time with these organizations. We're very concerned with what happens in our local environment, but also in the Gulf of Mexico. We think we've been good stewards. We have very minimal spillage over the years in the Gulf of Mexico. I think as good as anyone or better. We do think that it's important that we monitor that at all times. I'll knock on the table here a little bit and tell you that we've never had an employee a death on the job from our operations in over 35 years. So I think that's pretty stellar. I realize that this can happen, but I do think that part of that is a very large part of that is our commitment to making sure that people are safe. I never ask anybody to do anything that I wouldn't do personally, nor should anybody else. So with that said, let me give you a little bit more operational overview. I do get a lot of questions about COVID and what we're doing to screen people. We've had very good success. We screen people before they get on helicopters or boats. We ask our employees to take some responsibility, wear their face masks, do the social distancing, whether they're onshore or offshore, and we found this to be pretty successful. We have had three incidences of COVID-19 that have occurred in our offices. All of these occurred with people who were on their time off. We've had no further infections. Tracing was adequate to support that. We did have an outbreak at one of our facilities. The good thing about offshore is that when you do have an outbreak on one of these facilities, it is fairly well contained on that facility. We've resolved all those issues. To my knowledge, at this point in time, we don't have anybody infected with the disease. And anybody that was infected, fortunately, they reported it early, and we were able to quarantine properly. So we've had no real issue with operations regarding COVID-19, other than it just takes longer to plan and get personnel out and get things done. I'm going to skip slide 11. This is a pretty well-known slide in the Gulf of Mexico that we invented years ago. I think it's important to note. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention, since we can't see the presentation, people should just go to the website and it's available there. Sorry, go ahead.
We're going to make sure you see the presentation. Hold on just one moment. I'm sorry you didn't see the presentation. It was not my understanding that was the case, but we'll fix it.
There we go. Now it's up.
Can you see it now? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
Again, my apologies. That shouldn't have happened.
We're all learning.
All right.
We're all learning.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. So, I've skipped the first 12, so why not go to 13? This just gives you an idea of where we are around the Gulf of Mexico. We have operations in shallow water, but even in waters deep as 7,000 feet. Big Bend and Dancer were discoveries that we had a few years ago. They're online producing, and we have a range of subsea tiebacks, facilities, standalone facilities, large platforms. Virgo is 1,130 feet of water. During 1910 is 557 feet of water. We consider deep water anything in excess of 500 feet, irrespective of what other definitions there might be. And the reason is because that's about the maximum depth that you can work a jack-up rig in is 500 feet. Everything else has to float. 14, again, we go through a fairly rigorous process of evaluating these things. And evaluating our projects, it's important to us that we make the economics work. I'd like to focus now more on some of the things that we do that maybe the investment community isn't aware of with regard to our reserves. I always throw this slide up, something we put in our presentations for many years now. It just gives you an idea of what our reserves look like when we make a discovery. We have proved producing reserves we put online. You can see from this diagram, page slide 15, that we include a proved undeveloped portion, which is up dip from the proved producing reserves. And if you look at this diagram, this is a cross section of really what is an anticlinal structure or an underground hill, if you will. Down dip of the proved producing reserves, you'll see a probable sand thickness of oil, and you'll see a possible sand thickness of oil. Again, this is a cartoon, but it gives you an idea of what we're thinking about. Those probable and possible reserves can be larger. We're showing you an active water drive, so the water-oil interface is important. We could drill a well at that water-oil interface and prove up all those reserves, but because of the rock properties that we find in the Gulf of Mexico, permeability and porosity, we feel like a lot of times that would just be superfluous. Mother Nature will bring it to the wellbore. We don't get those reserves booked, but we know they're coming to us, and we prove that graphically. We show you some examples on slide 16. I'm going to go to our Mahogany field, and specifically one sand in Mahogany, what we call our Tisa sand, which was a discovery we made after a several years owning this field and getting more data and diagnostics and drilling some wells. With the initial well that we drilled was several thousand feet deeper than the field pay sands. First well booked 4 million barrels of oil, 8 million barrels of proved producing oil, rather 8 million barrels of proved probable reserves, and 22 million barrels of possible reserves. Skip forward to year 7. Mind you, we drilled a couple more wells, but we also increased production. We increased proved producing reserves from 4 million barrels to 33 million. We increased probable reserves from 8 million to 52 million. And we increased possible and probable and possible category to 101 million barrels from 22 million barrels. So a gift that just keeps on giving. We see other examples of that in other fields that they're in deep water, and Fairway Field is shallow water, so no real difference from that. We're seeing higher reserves from beginning to end. So that's the point. We do find that our probable and possible reserves add value to the company. So when I think about what kind of value is, we're trying to, We do give you a quantification on that. We at zero capex, we kind of generate between $260 and $600 million worth of value, roughly. And with a little bit of investment, we can get up to about $1.2 billion probables, excuse me, possibles, and 733 million probables. So almost, 1.9 billion in PV-10 with a $258 million investment. That's how we see our probable and possible reserves. We know we get benefit from the probables and possibles as they come to the wellbore. We don't get them booked immediately like you would onshore, being nearby an existing wellbore because of the nature of the geology of the Gulf of Mexico. A few examples of acquisitions that we've made in the past. This is certainly by no means all of them. This just covers the last 10 years or so. But we continue to make acquisitions as we go along. We look for three things when we do these acquisitions. We look to find a proved producing reserve base that generates cash flow. We look for upside with the drill bit. And then the last thing we look for is workovers, recompletions, and facilities upgrades, things that can increase cash flow near term and give us an idea of future possibilities with the drill bit and future possibilities with preparing equipment to make it work more efficiently. As we go through that process, we add value to it. So if the answers to all the questions we have prior to making the acquisition is yes, then that's something we want to chase. We look at that as then just being a matter of price. And we get our fair share over the years. We expect to get our fair share going forward. Again, we stress making sure that we do an adequate job of evaluating all of our properties. We get the data. We buy data. We do occasionally get involved in original shoots as an underwriter. We're seeing some success with that. It's not a normal part of our business, but where we think it warrants it, that's what we'll do. And we've done that in the area around our fields in Mahogany and closer to our larger assets that we have in the Gulf of Mexico. So with that, I'll just tell you that we're pretty excited about what we're seeing with the data. We think it is a competitive advantage. We, of course, buy other data that people have had out for a few years, not necessarily older vintage, but fairly recent vintage within the last 4 to 5 years, probably. But we are starting to participate in more. Sorry about that. Turn that off. Well, that's what happens in virtual. You get all the other disturbances around you. But we are excited about this data, and we will continue to improve the company with data. On slide 22, if you're following along in the slide presentation, we give you an idea of areas that we are interested in. We don't define it exactly, but it is shelf. It's also deep water. It's also kind of that medium depth in the 300 to 500 foot range as well. So I think that's important for us, and will carry us well in the future with not only acquisitions, but making those acquisitions more valuable with a drill bit. We did a drilling joint venture a couple of years ago, along with an equity fund, HarborVest and Baker Hughes GE. We've drilled 9 wells in that program. Obviously, we're having a bit of a pause on it while we go through this period of lower pricing and the pandemic. But I don't see any reason why that doesn't continue into the future. We'll have some more to say about that in the question and answer period. I don't think it's any secret about what we do as a company to manage our debt and our acquisitions. That's an ongoing part of our business. It's worked well for the last 35 years. I don't see any reason to change that. We do generate cash flow, and that's one of the stellar aspects of the Gulf of Mexico, is that it tends to be cash flow positive for those that manage it properly, and that's always one of the things that I've been very impressed with in the Gulf of Mexico and the reason why we're still here. So with that, I'm going to tell you that if you'll go to slide 27, we take a lot of pride in the fact that we have a large ownership, a large insider ownership in the company. So with us and employees, it's so a little over 34%. With me and our employees, it's us. We are over 34% as a management team. So when we think about things in light of fiduciary responsibilities and how we look at the economics, we treat it like it's our own money because it is. So we spent a good bit of time improving our capital structure. Slide 28 gives you an example of that. We've reduced debt quite a bit since 2015 or so. We've reduced debt nearly $1 billion. So we've made a concentrated effort toward doing that. We've done that with cash flow. We made a sale of assets at one point in time, and we did an exchange also of shares for equity. Debt for equity as well. I did all the things that we needed to do to put the company back in full cash flow position after the debacle in 2014-2015 with pricing, and of course after the most recent one as well. We continue to generate cash flow. Slide 29, you can look at that at your leisure. We've also made a good bit of effort toward reducing our cash flow and our cash lifting costs, rather. So we think that that's an important part of what we do. Clearly, in these down times, you focus on reducing those costs, and everybody does. But this is the kind of pictorial proof of it in recent months. So take a look at that at your leisure. CapEx forecast we put out at $15 to $25 million. That's about 82% less than we spent in 2019. So we are trying to hoard cash a bit. I think that's important for what we need to do going forward. We are at the same time with our geological and geophysical team focusing very hard on what it is that we need to do to continue to grow the company and add reserves and cash flow. We've taken a fairly proactive stance to asset retirement obligations, P&As. We spent a good bit of money in the years before this most recent downturn. As a result, we haven't needed to spend as much as we had in previous years. So that's kind of put us on a good standing at the moment without having to spend money on things that don't generate revenue. If I think about 2020 and beyond, go to slide 33. We do think about these things all the time because we've been through a bunch of down times, a bunch of downturns, and I think in my career about seven of them now. We make our priorities. We have a pretty good idea how to do it. That's why we continue to exist. We do manage our relationships with our vendors and manage safety to it. We don't compromise on safety. That's not something that we ever want to do as a function of whatever the producing environment is. But we do manage cost reduction efforts and trying to generate maximum cash flow. Page 34, I'm going to let you look at that pretty much on your own. We do have adequate liquidity. Currently, the debt ratios haven't gotten any worse. In fact, they've gotten better. We have added some cash, I'm very pleased with where the company is with regard to its balance sheet. And with that, I'm prepared to turn this over to you guys for questioning.
Hey, Tracy. So, yeah, we have just maybe 5 minutes here. So, you know, maybe a couple of questions. You said you continue to look at acquisitions. What is the acquisition market in the Gulf of Mexico look like now? What size or scale of transactions would you be thinking about? Would be small tuck-in acquisitions like Magnolia or larger ones like Mobile Bay? And will the focus would be more on oil or gas? I know you mentioned you're sort of agnostic on commodity, so just curious to get your thoughts there.
Yeah, thanks. I see it as all of the above. We're looking at a lot of different types of acquisitions, single acquisitions, tuck-ins, as well as larger acquisitions. There is a lot of activity in the Gulf. We think that market's going to be pretty robust going into the future. And as you noted, we are agnostic as to whether it's oil or gas. We care about what makes money. I think that's been the mantra of the company since day one.
And then how would you think about financing said acquisitions? Are you concerned about adding leverage to the balance sheet in this kind of pricing environment? Do you still have the potential commitments from the groups like Monza who would help fund an acquisition?
Yeah, we are very cognizant of the balance sheet. We're reticent to add debt unless it makes really good economic sense. And that's one of the reasons that our RBL has served us well over three decades to be able to do that. So we buy something, we lever up, we pay it down as quickly as we possibly can, and then lever down and go do it again. We became a public company so that we could attract different types of financing many years ago, and so we always have that tool. And then there's quite a bit of money on the sidelines looking for good deals. And I think as a result of the slaughter that's occurred onshore with the shale players, that we see a lot of money coming out of private equity that's looking for a home. And I think that some of the larger transactions will attract that.
Okay. And then as you're aware, right, the sentiment on natural gas has improved significantly in recent months. And you have pretty good leverage to higher natural gas prices. As you develop your drilling budget for 2021, will you prioritize drilling gas wells at Mobile Bay? How much could those wells cost, and what kind of IP rates would you expect from them?
Well, I appreciate it. We've looked at Mobile Bay very hard as an acquisition. We took a little abuse when we first bought it from the markets because it was gas. Now it's looking like maybe that wasn't so bad a decision after all. The field is doing well. This is a very long life field. I'm convinced that if we do nothing, it's going to be here for another 15 to 20 years. That's what the numbers say. We are looking at drilling out there, drilling a well. Per our current estimates, drill, complete, and hook up is around $70 million. And we feel like that's something that's likely to occur in 2021. We are sharpening up that location, as I mentioned before. We've just gotten new data, so we're going to evaluate that, make sure that we go put the well where we want it, then we'll start the permitting process. And I still expect that the first permit to go out to the oil and gas board probably this year. We were somewhat deferred from conditions, but the reality is that this field has a lot of life left in it. Gas prices are, forward curve still pretty good here. We have seen higher pricing for it, so it makes us feel very confident that we've done the right thing. We will be combining the plants shortly. That occurs starting in October. We've done that. Production won't be down very long. It's not a big cost item. It's a few million dollars to make that turnaround, and we'll put it into one plant, which will be the larger plant that is in fact capable of producing about 420 million a day, I believe. The current production leaves us couple hundred million cubic feet a day with the combined flow going through one plant. So we see that as advantageous for us. It'll save us several million dollars a year in operating costs. We'll be able to utilize those personnel as well for that facility and other things in the area. So we're very, very pleased to talk about that today, and those plans are on schedule.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Tracy. We've hit the top of our time allocation. So I want to again thank you for participating in the Barclays Conference. I want to let you get back to your meetings. We appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Goodbye.